Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Radio Havana, Cuba, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. In Myanmar, protests against a military coup have escalated, and 38 citizens were murdered on Wednesday, and 15 journalists were detained. Next week marks the 10th anniversary of the disaster at the Fukushima nuclear power plants, and an NHK poll shows that 70% of the population do not believe that they are being told the truth about what has happened. The Japanese government's bank will no longer finance coal-fired power plants overseas. 4 electric motorcycle manufacturers are jointly developing exchangeable batteries to be placed at stations along roadways. Britain is going to offer $20 billion worth of green bonds to help finance renewable energy projects. NHK Japan.
We begin in Myanmar, where security forces continue to intensify their crackdown on people protesting against last month's coup. The United Nations says nearly 40 people were killed on Wednesday, making it by far the deadliest day yet. Security forces opened fire on crowds in the largest city of Yangon, the second largest city of Mandalay, and the central city of Monywa. A witness in Yangon said police used machine guns, causing a number of casualties. The UN Special Envoy to Myanmar is condemning the latest violence.
Today, it was the bloodiest day since the coup happened on the 1st of February. We had today, 38 people died. We have now more than over 50 people died since the coup started, and many are wounded.
The military is also clamping down on the media. A local human rights group says as of Tuesday, at least 15 journalists have been detained while covering the protests. A spokesperson for the U.S. State Department says he is appalled by the loss of life and criticized the arrest of journalists covering the unrest.
We call on the military to immediately release these individuals and to cease intimidation and harassment of the media and others unjustly detained merely for doing their jobs, for exercising their universal rights.
Price says the Biden administration is considering additional measures to hold the military accountable. Washington imposed sanctions on a number of senior officials in the junta last month.
Next week marks 10 years since a massive earthquake and tsunami crippled the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in northeastern Japan. In a recent NHK poll, more than 70% of respondents feel they still haven't been provided with the overall picture of the disaster. The government plans to decommission the facility, which suffered a triple meltdown, by 2051. More than 80% of respondents said the work has not gone smoothly. Massive volumes of radioactive wastewater are being stored at the plant. A government panel of experts has suggested diluting it to safe levels and discharging it into the sea. More than half of the poll's respondents oppose the idea. It's supported by less than 20%. The respondents were also asked about the use of nuclear energy nationwide. Half said they want fewer plants. 17% said they want none. Nearly 30% said the current number should be maintained. Just 3% want more.
The governor of the Japan Bank for International Cooperation has said that the government-owned financial institution will stop funding new coal-fired power plant projects overseas. The comment Tuesday by Maeda Tadashi comes amid growing opposition to use the coal and the role of banks in financing them.
The trend now is to shift away from carbon. Coal is increasingly being rejected as it is the energy source producing the most carbon dioxide emissions.
JBIC has been funding energy projects overseas that involve Japanese businesses. In December, the bank decided to jointly provide about $1.7 billion in financing with private Japanese banks to build a coal-fired power plant in Vietnam. The Bun An 2 project has been the target of criticism from overseas investors. Maeda said Bun An 2 would probably be the last project in which Japan's private banks participate. Four motorcycle makers from Japan and Europe plan to jointly develop swappable batteries for their electric bikes. Japan's Honda and Yamaha have teamed up with Austria's KTM and Piaggio of Italy to promote the use of electric motorbikes. They plan to install stations along roads where riders can exchange a spent battery for a charged one to continue their journey. Starting in May, the consortium will aim to reduce the cost of batteries and charging infrastructure and extend the mileage on a single charge. The four plan to invite other companies to join the initiative. Honda says the global push to reduce carbon dioxide emissions through electrification is accelerating, especially in Europe. It says it will explore cooperation with other manufacturers while continuing to compete with them on products and services. People in Britain will get the chance to buy green bonds as the country looks to a cleaner future. Money raised will fund projects to help the environment. Chancellor Rishi Sunak plans to issue bonds worth at least £15 billion, or just over $20 billion in the fiscal year starting in April. They will finance things like offshore wind farms. The move comes as Britain gears up to host a major climate change conference known as COP26 in November.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are heard from 8:30 to 9 p.m. at 6155-7245 and 7445, or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. Tuesday was the fifth anniversary of the murder of Honduran indigenous environmental activist Berta Cáceres. Seven people were convicted for her assassination, but none of those who hired them. The United Nations has warned that hunger levels are soaring across Central America due to COVID and extreme weather events. The Iranian foreign minister has said that recent rocket attacks against U.S. positions in Iraq are suspicious, aimed at damaging relations and giving the U.S. an excuse for bombing raids in Syria. Syria urged the United Nations to condemn Israeli rocket attacks on its territory. Then a viewpoint on the U.S. military troops and nuclear weapons remaining in Western Europe and U.S. military expansion in Latin America. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Tuesday, March the 2nd, marked the fifth anniversary of the murder of Honduran environmental activist Berta Cáceres. Civil society organizations in the Central American country held a day of commemorations and a renewal of the struggle for justice. Berta Cáceres, who was co-founder of the Civic Council of Popular and Indigenous Organizations of Honduras, was murdered on March the 2nd, 2016, in La Esperanza. She led a campaign to prevent the construction of a hydroelectric dam with international funding on a river sacred to the Lenca people, her community of origin. 5 years after the assassination of the social activist and defender of indigenous peoples and the environment in Honduras, 7 people were convicted for her murder. They were convicted of masterminding the assassination, but those who hired the murderers to kill Berta Cáceres are still in hiding. Human rights organizations from around the world have repeatedly called on Honduran authorities to guarantee the rights of access to justice, truth, and reparation for the family of Berta Cáceres and the members of the Civic Council of Popular and Indigenous Organizations of Honduras. The United Nations has warned that hunger levels are soaring across much of Central America as countries battle economic crises sparked by the COVID-19 pandemic and extreme climate events. The UN's World Food Programme said that levels of hunger had risen nearly fourfold in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua, from 2.2 million people affected in 2018 to nearly 8 million now. Of that figure, some 1.7 million people are considered to be in the, quote, emergency category of food insecurity, the World Programme said, urging more international support. The UN agency said the region, where years of drought and erratic weather had already disrupted food production, had been especially hard hit by the record 2020 Atlantic hurricane season. Quote, hurricanes Eta and Iota that struck Central America in November 2020 upended the lives of 6.8 million people who lost their homes and livelihoods, WFP pointed out. The hurricanes came as the pandemic was already taking a devastating toll and dealt a severe blow to millions who had previously been relatively untouched by hunger, including people working in the service economy and tourism sector. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has said recent rocket attacks against U.S. positions in Iraq are, quote, suspicious, and the perpetrators must be identified. Following a meeting in Tehran with his Iraqi counterpart, Fuad Hussein, Zarif said on Saturday the series of attacks could be aimed at damaging Iran-Iraqi relations. Quote, we emphasize on the necessity of action by the Iraqi government to identify the perpetrators of these incidents, Zarif said, according to a statement by the Iranian Foreign Ministry. For his part, Hussein assured Zarif that, quote, Baghdad will not allow these incidents to tarnish the great relations between the two countries. A volley of rockets last Monday targeted the fortified Green Zone in Baghdad, where the U.S. and other embassies are based. It came days after rockets hit the airport near the northern city of Erbil, killing a contractor with the U.S.-led military coalition and wounding several others. The U.S. blamed the attacks on pro-Iran factions operating under the umbrella of the Hashud al-Shabi paramilitary forces that are part of the Iraqi state security apparatus. In retaliation, the U.S. on Thursday launched air raids on facilities in eastern Syria along the border with Iraq that are used by Iran-backed militias. Syria has once again called on the United Nations Security Council, the UNSC, to condemn Israeli attacks on its territory, urging the world body to act decisively to stop the regime. In a letter addressed to the UN Security Council, Syria urged the body to hold the Tel Aviv regime accountable for the attacks, hours after Syria's air defenses intercepted Israeli missiles coming from the direction of the occupied Golan Heights. According to the Syrian military, the missiles were fired hours before midnight on Sunday at targets in the vicinity of Damascus. The letter to the UN Security Council read, quote, this new aggression comes 2 days after the U.S. air attack on Syrian sovereignty in Deir al-Sawad province on the Syrian-Iraqi borders, in light of the support and protection of the U.S. successive administrations and some Western countries to Israel. Earlier, U.S. warplanes conducted airstrikes on areas in Syria's eastern province of Deir al-Sawad near the Iraqi border. It was the first of its kind under President Joe Biden. The Syrian Foreign Ministry said in its letter to the UN Security Council, quote, Damascus reaffirms that it will not hesitate to practice its rights in defending its land, people, and its sovereignty by all means guaranteed by the UN Charter and the rules of international law.
The United States President Joe Biden frequently says that America is back, intended to take some distance from his predecessor Donald Trump, but also to mislead those who truly expect a change of path in the Northern power. However, this country never left the world stage except for some very specific issues, and this is evidenced in one of the clearest elements of its hegemony, pushes the military presence in places of a political sensitivity. Western Europe remains to be the Pentagon's favorite region, not only for the number of troops, war equipment, and communication centers, but also for the amount of nuclear weapons. As confirmed a report of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, released in April 2019, where it supposedly made a mistake of pointing out that 150 warheads, particularly atomic bombs of the B-61 type, are deposited in six American bases in Europe. These bases are Kleinbrogel in Belgium, Buchel in Germany, Aviano and Gedi Torre in Italy, Volkel in Netherlands, and Israelik in Turkey. But a new version of the report released shortly thereafter removed this information. More recent, the Russian general Anatoly Sidorov warned that in Poland there are plans to build military infrastructures to house up to 20,000 American soldiers, and Bulgaria could accommodate up to 5,000 Pentagon troops. All these projects are closely linked to NATO and are part of the deliberate attempt to destabilize the security system on the European continent, said Sidorov. Some may recall the rumor that Trump was preparing to reduce his German-based contingent. That, in the end, was nothing more than a rumor. Perhaps it worked as a blackmail to get Europeans to contribute with more money to the Atlantic Alliance, but it was never confirmed. Washington's military plans are also gaining ground in Latin America. In this regard, Panamanian analyst Julio Jao has provided some details. It's a so-called Naval Operational Support Center, a new variant of the General Staff that will strengthen the Southern Command based in Panama and will operate under the pretext of coordinating the fight against drug trafficking and other forms of organized crime. Actually, it will be focusing on Venezuela and the emergence of progressive governments and, consequently, the flourishing of regional integration. We must be alert. The United States' hegemonism is not coming back. It just never left.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working pretty well at radiohc.cu, though the podcasts have not been updated in a while. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-financed program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I'm grateful for a donation from a listener in Mendocino County, California. Many thanks. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The International Criminal Court has agreed to investigate charges of war crimes committed in the Palestinian territory since 2014. Israel has accused Iran of being involved in the catastrophic oil spill on the Israeli coastline. Then brief reports on Saudi Arabia, Afghan women reporters that were murdered, European Union sanctions against Russia, and a prison term for former French President Sarkozy for corruption while in office. A series of updates on the COVID crisis and vaccines, and border checks requiring proof of a negative COVID test. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
We begin tonight with the Palestinians, the Israelis, and accusations of war crimes. Today, the International Criminal Court opened an investigation into alleged war crimes committed in the Palestinian territories since 2014. The probe will target both the Israeli military and the Palestinian militant group Hamas. It comes after the ICC ruled last month that it has jurisdiction over territories occupied by Israel, including the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Authority has welcomed the investigation. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has accused the court of hypocrisy and anti-Semitism. All right, for more now, we can go to Jerusalem. Our correspondent Tanya Kramer is on the story for us. Good evening to you, Tanya. Despite Israel's attempts to postpone the decision, the prosecutor has announced the opening of an investigation into war crimes. What more do we know tonight?
Well, as you said, that has been a long process after a nearly five-year-long preliminary investigation, and also after the decision back in February just last month by a panel of three judges who had ruled that indeed the ICC has jurisdiction over the occupied West Bank, Gaza and East Jerusalem. Now, the chief prosecutor, Fatou Ben Soudah, had referred this matter to the panel of three judges back in December 2019, when she concluded that there are grounds to open a formal investigation against Israeli and Palestinian individuals for alleged war crimes, but she had to refer to the panel of three judges to get their opinion on the jurisdiction. Now, we are expecting this investigation to deal with everything that happened after 2014, the Gaza war between Israel and Hamas, then the issue of construction of settlements in the occupied territory, as well as possibly the actions of the Israeli military against Palestinian protesters along the Gaza fence during 2018.
We know that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he has called this decision anti-Semitic and absurd. What can he do now?
Well, that is a good question. Of course, Israel also has now a period of time to answer to this opening of the investigation. But the reaction by the Israeli Prime Minister doesn't come as a surprise. Already last month, he had called that decision by the judges by the ICC as anti-Semitic. This has been a long-held view by Israel that the court is overstepping its mandate and that this is a highly politicized issue and that the court actually doesn't have jurisdiction. Now, we also have to mention this is kind of a consensus in Israeli politics. We heard from several other political leaders tonight being highly critical of this decision by the ICC, not by all parties, but by most. I have to mention that because we're also in the middle of an election campaign. There are elections in 3 weeks, and some of his political rivals will certainly use this against Mr. Netanyahu because it happened on his watch. But again, this is a decision that will go beyond party politics and beyond this election. This will keep Israeli politics busy for years to come. So on the Palestinian side, of course, this decision was warmly welcomed. We had a statement from the foreign ministry saying that this will lead to accountability and justice. And you have to say the Palestinians have been working very diligently on this issue to internationalize, to go and join international organizations. Mm-hmm. And so they hope that somehow Israel will be held accountable for what it does here in this conflict.
Okay, DW's Tanya Kramer with the latest tonight in Jerusalem.
Israel's Environment Protection Minister has accused Iran of links to a catastrophic oil spill off the Israeli coast. The spill is one of the country's worst ever ecological disasters. Israel says it's found the ship responsible for the slick and is calling it environmentalism terrorism. There has been no immediate comment from Iran.
Reporters Without Borders has accused Saudi Arabia's crown prince of crimes against humanity over the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The media watchdog has filed a complaint with Germany's public prosecutor seeking an inquiry under the country's international jurisdiction laws. The group accuses Saudi Arabia of persecuting Khashoggi and dozens of other journalists. Gunmen in Afghanistan have shot and killed three women who worked for a broadcaster in the city of Jalalabad. Government sources say the women were attacked separately on their way home from work. These are the latest in a series of shootings and bombings targeting journalists and other professionals in recent weeks.
Iraqi and American military officials say at least 10 rockets targeted the Ain al-Assad coalition base in Iraq early on Wednesday, the second rocket attack in Iraq this month. It came as the country prepares for the visit of Pope Francis on Friday. It'll be his first visit to the country.
The European Union and the United States have placed new sanctions on Russian officials and companies connected to the poisoning and imprisonment of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. Washington says its intelligence found that Moscow was behind Navalny's poisoning with a nerve agent last August. Russia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs says it will retaliate against the sanctions.
Former French President Nicolas Sarkozy has been found guilty of corruption and influence peddling. A court in Paris sentenced him to 3 years in jail, two of them suspended. Sarkozy's lawyer says that he will appeal the conviction. The World Health Organization's emergencies director says that it is unrealistic to think that the pandemic will be over by the end of this year. The global number of new infections is on the rise for the first time in 7 weeks. U.S. media reports that former President Donald Trump and wife Melania received their coronavirus shots before leaving the White House. Both contracted and recovered from COVID-19 in the run-up to the presidential election. And health experts in China say that the vaccine rollout there is slow because it has the virus largely under control. Officials say that the aim to inoculate 40% of the population is by June.
Data from Public Health England shows the threat of serious illness is cut by 80% in seniors, even after just one shot of a two-dose vaccine. The UK was the first European country to authorise COVID-19 shots. The children's charity UNICEF says more than 168 million children are not in school due to the pandemic. The executive director says the situation presents a global education emergency as we reach the one-year mark since the pandemic first took hold in many countries. And the new head of the US Health Authority says rapidly spreading variants pose the threat of a fourth pandemic wave in the United States. Rochelle Walensky is calling on Americans to remain vigilant against the coronavirus.
The EU's medicines regulator has begun a rolling review of Russia's Sputnik V vaccine, paving the way for its potential approval for use across the bloc. Sputnik has proven to be more than 90% effective in clinical trials. The World Health Organization is warning Europe to increase its vigilance for new highly infectious strains of coronavirus. COVID-19 infections across the EU rose by a million last week, ending 6 weeks of decline. And millions of vaccination shots from the free COVAX program are due to arrive in Nigeria, Angola and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Last week, Ghana and the Ivory Coast received the first of the UN program's batches. An explosion at a coronavirus testing centre shattered windows in the Dutch town of Boven-Kaarspel, 60 kilometres north of Amsterdam. There were no injuries. Dutch police say the explosion appears to have been deliberate. An investigation has begun.
New restrictions along the French-German border came into force today in a move to contain the spread of the coronavirus. Workers commuting across the border will now have to present a negative PCR test in order to be able to travel. In France's Moselle region, which shares a border with Germany, the coronavirus has been spreading more rapidly than in the rest of France. There's growing concern over the spread of the more dangerous South African variant, for example.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website, along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.